Welcome to Asphalt Talk, a podcast by and for asphalt professionals. Join our expert hosts as they tackle real industry issues to pave a smoother way for asphalt suppliers and producers. This podcast is sponsored by MAPA, the Missouri Asphalt Pavement Association. Founded to promote quality and accountability, MAPA has been serving the asphalt producers of Missouri since 1990. And now a public service announcement from our sponsor, MayCreate Design. Google Translate doesn't work for web designer to paving company translations. You say hot mix and it thinks you're talking about the latest snack craze. Wouldn't it be nice to work with a designer who knows the difference between binders and bitumen? Work with folks who have been speaking your language for the past 17 years. Visit maycreate.com. That's M-A-Y-E-create.com. Because if you think your website sucks, so does everyone else.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Asphalt Talk. I'm Dale Williams with the Missouri Asphalt Pavement Association. I'm thrilled to have you join us today. We have a special guest on the show, Reed Ryan, the Executive Director of the Asphalt Pavement Alliance. In today's episode, we'll explore the role of the APA as a vital resource for the asphalt industry and delve into Reed's vision as he steps into the important leadership position. Before we dive into the details of his work with the APA, let's take a moment to get to know Reed a little bit better. Reed, it's a pleasure to have you here today. I'm looking forward to our conversation and learning more about your journey and the exciting developments in the APA. So with that, how long have you been with the APA and what were you doing before you joined?
Well, thanks, Dale. It's a pleasure to join you this morning and join with your listeners. Appreciate the opportunity and just want to make sure you understand how grateful I am for being invited to be on the podcast. My background with the APA runs a total of about 6 months. So a lot has happened in that 6 months and not enough has happened in that 6 months if we look at it. And hopefully we'll delve into a little bit in that regard. But APA has been a great opportunity for me coming from the role of the executive director of the Utah Asphalt Pavement Association. I've learned a lot in these 6 months and I look forward to many more years in the position.
What initially drew you to the APA?
I would say it boils down to one word, which is opportunity. So I think I saw and learned a lot of things as growing UAPA, the Utah Asphalt Pavement Association, from the ground up. We had to make sure that we really focused heavily on strategic direction and being able to identify what the association was capable of doing. And I think the reverse of that, more importantly, is what the association shouldn't do or couldn't do. And I think when I looked at the APA and its you know, the history arc associated with the APA, I think I saw somewhat of a similar trajectory, although the APA had been in existence for a much longer time, in that there was an opportunity, I think, to really come in and to help, you know, put my stamp on the Asphalt Pavement Alliance, be able, I think, and I hope, to put it onto a really clear strategic path that will be readily identifiable for all of the partners. And I think put it on a trajectory that will gear it for success if I should ever leave or for whoever might come after me, so that they will be able to more readily identify, hey, this is what the APA is, this is what the APA isn't, and then be able to you know, fulfill that role correctly.
So as you look back over your career, which job stands out as your favorite and why?
That is a really tough question. In fact, I think every job I've had, I've been so lucky because I've loved every job. And that goes from working at Home Depot as a college student to what I'm doing now with the APA. I've just felt very blessed in regards to everything I've engaged in. I've just learned to absolutely love. And so it's hard for me to pick one. But I would kind of make a distinction. I think the most influential job I've ever had was my very first official job as a kid, as a 15-year-old kid. I got hired at a local mom and pop Ace Hardware store in the little town in Colorado where I grew up. And that job ended up setting me on a course for my work ethic and what I wanted out of my jobs and the people I wanted to work for. That was the job that I believe was most influential for me in my life.
So did you always want to work in the road construction industry, and specifically, how did you get into the asphalt industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. My path is, I think, pretty unique and a lot different than most folks. Did I always want to work in the road construction industry, if I'm honest with you and the listeners? The answer is actually probably no. It wasn't necessarily even on my radar screen until I started working for Senator Orrin Hatch in the United States Senate. And as my role there dictated, I was able to handle a little bit of the infrastructure policy for Senator Hatch. And that's really what started to tie me first back into the industry here with the asphalt pavement industry. I was starting to meet with the Utah Department of Transportation, other transportation officials, cities, counties, the local AGC here in Utah would always come back to the Senate offices. That's what really opened my eyes to this industry. And then, as fate would have it, you know, there's a sad part to this, but also a very happy ending to this. Unfortunately, my father-in-law was diagnosed with stage 4 melanoma cancer, and my wife is from Utah, and she's the oldest daughter. And she felt a very strong need to get back for both her father and for her mother, you know, seeing that the writing was essentially on the wall that he would eventually pass. The sad part of this story is he passed very quickly. And maybe that's actually a blessing when it comes down to it with all things associated with cancer. But he did end up passing fairly quickly from stage 4 melanoma cancer. And of course, that left my mother-in-law all to herself. And that pool became only strongly for only that much more strong for my wife. So we started looking around what opportunities in Utah, and as fate would have it, my brother was in the industry working for Ergon at the time. He called me on the phone one day, I remember very vividly, and he said, "Hey, there's a few of us here in Utah that are thinking about starting an asphalt pavement association. You probably don't know what that is, but I think you would be great at it, but I'm not going to help you get the job." And he hung up the phone. And then he sent me a little bit of information and said, you know, "Hey, here's the application. Again, good luck. I think you'd be great, but don't expect me to pull any strings or do anything that way. You know, it's a good big brother." So he provided the opportunity for me, gave me the opportunity to apply. I met a couple really influential people here that ended up hiring me as the first executive director of the Utah Asphalt Pavement Association. And the rest is a bit of history now, going on 12 years since that day.
You know, you said you had an unusual path, Reed, getting into the asphalt industry, but I'd argue that most people don't start their career or think about what they want to do in life and say, "Hey, I want to work in the asphalt industry." And you'll find that most people had a unique pathway to where they're at. You know, I'm a civil engineer, and I was going to build bridges and structures. And when I started with the DOT, I started out in the design division in Macon, Missouri, which is about an hour and a half north of where I'm from. Had the opportunity to go to work in the construction materials division, which I thought would be just a brief stint till I got to bridge to return to the Jefferson City area. And here it is, 28 years later, I'm still playing in the asphalt world. So it's, but I wouldn't change a thing.
Wouldn't it be nice, Dale, if we were all smart enough to realize from the start just how awesome this industry is and join it? Yeah. And I think we try to do that a lot, right, with workforce challenges and problems and trying to tell people, "Hey, this is actually really, really good." And it's true. It's just so true, because you can come into this industry, you can build a magnificent career. There's opportunities to engage at whatever level you would want to and move up to whatever level you would actually want to get to in your, you know, your career path. And yet we challenge, it's a challenge to get folks into it. But if we were only that smart, all of us, to realize, "Hey, this is a pretty good spot to end up."
Yeah, it's been fun, and I look forward to continuing in it. So who was your most influential mentor in your career, and how'd they impact your journey?
Yeah, I mentioned just a moment ago briefly in passing that I worked for Senator Orrin Hatch, and I would have to say actually he's been my most influential mentor in my life when it comes to a work component. And the reason being for this is by the time I started working for Orrin Hatch, he had already been in the Senate for decades. And, you know, political views around that aside, the point was, is he is a pretty influential person. He ran a number of the most influential committees in the United States Senate. And he was a high-ranking Republican within our government. And the best part about Orrin Hatch is he treated me just like he would treat a king, just like he would treat the president of the United States. And I was a 25-year-old staffer who could be replaced at any moment, right? There was lots of 25-year-old Reed Ryans that wanted to go to work for Orrin Hatch. And yet here was this man, this giant of the Senate, and he was willing to engage with me on a very personal level and in fact mentor me. I always joke, he's the one that brainwashed me into going into law school. So Orrin Hatch is responsible for me going to law school and getting my law degree and pursuing that path while I worked for him during the day. And that was an incredibly challenging part of my life. And I would work all day in the Senate and go to law school at night until midnight when my wife would pick me up at the end of the metro route. And we did that as a couple for 4 years, and we did it with three sons. And I think it was Orrin Hatch who really gave me the confidence to say, you can do it, you know, and I'll support you to be able to do that. And so that time was so critical in laying the foundation that now you can see, we just talked about a moment ago, how all those dominoes started to fall into place as a result of his mentorship and the way that he treated me. And those are things that I've never forgotten, you know, as I've you know, grown in the asphalt pavement industry. We cross a lot of folks from construction crews, you know, to fellow associates. And I've just always tried to treat people right, treat them with kindness. And I believe that that all stems back to the way that I saw Orrin Hatch operate during his career.
Wow, that's really neat to, you know, the experience you had with the senator. You know, I don't think a lot of people understand they are just human beings at the end of the day. You see the soundbite on television, but I think they're different people than maybe the media lays them out to be.
Maybe we need to start a political podcast. I won't get to the clear. But I feel like we've missed that. Unfortunately, we're missing that, and a lot of the theatrics has taken over within our government, particularly at the federal level. When you still look to the local level, right, which is what's most important in our lives when it comes to what is our city council deciding, what is our local county deciding, you know, what is our state legislature, what are they working on? Those are the things, you know, that really touch us, I believe, on our day-to-day. The federal government is obviously there, sets a high level of policy. But, you know, in day-to-day life, Dale, between you and I, much of what they do, especially what they do on TV, just doesn't affect our lives. And it's unfortunate that that's what we all point to as to what our political system looks like today. I feel like we could get back. So that's my presidential stump speech. I'll get off of that now. If you'd like to donate, I'll give you the address later.
Perfect. Well, I would support you, Reed. I'd vote for you. Let's shift gears a little bit and tell us a little bit about your hobbies outside of work.
I have a few. The tan lines on my arms and on my feet will tell you very quickly that I'm an avid golfer. I love to get out and play golf. I think it stems back to my growing up in the mountains of Colorado. I remember many days, many summers, even winters, when I would get bundled up by my mom. I'd have my black Labrador by my side, and she would just say, go play. And here I was, you know, a 7 to 10 to 12 year old kid out wandering in the mountains of Colorado with my black lab, and just bonding and being in nature was incredibly influential for me. And I think now, living in more of an urban environment, suburban America, right, I think golf kind of gives me that tether back to just being outside and being connected and, you know, breathing fresh air and seeing blue sky. So I've always loved golf. Hopefully I always will be able to play golf as I age, you know, which is happening rather fast, unfortunately. I think the other thing is I've rediscovered my love and passion for snowboarding, which again comes back to my time in Colorado. This past year, my wife was very kind and gracious and said, let's buy all new equipment and get a couple of passes and see what we can do up on the mountains. And very quickly, from the very first ride this past winter, I remembered just how much I love snowboarding, and actually that I was pretty good at it at one point in my life as a teenager and in my early 20s. And so a lot of that, just like riding that bike adage, a lot of it just came back. And it was so fun as a 45-year-old man to be, you know, whizzing down the slopes at 40 miles an hour on a snowboard was a blast and exciting, and a feeling that I had forgotten for so long, because, you know, work, life, and career have all built up. And sometimes those things that we love and we're passionate about get pushed to the side. So that was a great re-engagement opportunity for me this year. And then I think the things that have helped supplement all along is I've become a little bit of a runner. I wouldn't classify myself as a marathoner or anything else, but I love being able to get out. And I think it's an important component as I age to find some sort of exercise. And then, of course, I love music. Can't sing for can't hold a note or sing for beans. Can't play an instrument. Couldn't tell you how to play a single chord. But I love music, and that's always been a big part of my life.
You know, you said you hope your golf game continues as you age. And I always think about my predecessor, Dave Yates, who I'm sure you recall.
I love Dave. Yeah, I miss him.
And I do too. And Dave would always come in, you know, on his 75th birthday and say, "Well, I shot my age, Dale, and 76, you know, and he continued to do that. And I said, "Dave, I'm never going to live to be 100.
Dave was a great man and a great golfer. I had the opportunity to golf with him a couple times. And yeah, I miss Dave. I'm glad you brought him up.
I always, when I play with him, I'd say, "Dave, do you ever get tired of hitting the ball down the middle?" And he'd say, "No."
I witnessed that a lot.
Yeah. So what's one thing that people in the asphalt industry don't know about you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I mentioned music. It's always been a part of my life. Well, there's a particular kind of music that's a huge part of my life, and that's punk music. So if you look at me, which you are doing right now, right?
Yeah.
Through the miracles of communication, I look like I'm pretty well put together, right? My hair's combed and I got a collared shirt on. But in my heart of hearts, I'm a punk rocker. And it goes all the way from like 80s hardcore music to bands like Minor Threat, all the way up to like folk punk singers, guys you've never heard of, which nobody's ever heard of, but like a Frank Turner. And so it runs the gamut. And I think what's always drawn me to it is, you know, punk rock like identifies problems and says, "Hey, here's a problem, right? And let's sing about it. And let's figure it out. And there's a better way." And I think that thematic messaging in the music has always stuck with me in my career and in my life to say, "Hey, yeah, this could be different, or this could be better. And here's a way that maybe we can do it." And I think that's just bled through me. So nobody knows I'm a punk rocker, you know, because of the way I look. I don't have the black leather jacket on and the chains or the mohawk dyed pink. But in my heart of hearts, I love punk music.
Well, that's certainly interesting. I've never listened to it, but I can certainly understand your passion for it. So let's shift gears, and I would like to maybe focus maybe on your current role with the APA. Can you start by giving us a brief history of the APA and how it evolved over time, especially with the recent changes?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. What I'm going to do is kind of answer this from the best of my memory, right? What I know of the APA. And my very first recollections of the APA started with my role with UAPA 12 years ago. And of course, the APA had been in existence prior to that, and really had been this national partnership, you know, to establish the foundation, the national partnership between the Asphalt Institute, the National Asphalt Pavement Association, and SAPA Inc., which is really, you know, a constituency of the 40 individual SAPAs, which is pretty amazing. So this national partnership alliance has formed. Various iterations of that take off from from marketing to speaking to engagement with political, or excuse me, with payment type decision makers. And my first memories come into that picture and to that flow with Mike Kovach, who is now running the Iowa SAPA, you know, again, which is awesome, which is where he was hired out of to take the role with the APA. But I remember Mike just being this incredibly engaging speaker, incredibly engaging person, which he still is. And he came to a few UAP events and was really able to, I think, portray the benefits of asphalt pavement and to market asphalt pavement. And we had a lot of decision makers at the Utah conference. And I always was grateful for Mike coming in and bringing such a positive message and being so engaging with folks and being able to reach out. And so I think he kind of had the APA in that youthful state. And then he moved on. We were very lucky as an industry to hire Amy Miller, who actually, if I remember correctly, came from the concrete industry and brought a very different perspective, a very good perspective that I think that the APA needed. And to Amy's credit, as I've thought more about this in the last 6 months, her task was, I think, to really kind of handle the APA in those angsty teenage years, if you will. And if you remember like our own teenage years, like you're kind of trying to figure out who you are, you're trying to figure out, you know, who you report to, what you do. And Amy, to her credit, was the right person at the right time to help handle those angsty APA teenage years, if you will. And I want to give her full credit for being able to do what she did and manage, I think, some very difficult growing pains for the APA in those years, right? And really trying to narrow down and figure out what the APA is and what the APA does. So Amy was able to successfully navigate those waters, and then an awesome opportunity opened up for her to join the Asphalt Contractors Association of Florida. And that's where she is at now, bringing all that expertise from the national level back down to the local level. And now I come in, and I think I have a unique perspective. Having started UAPA from the ground up, I understood, as I mentioned a little bit, what it takes to really identify who you are, right? And I think conversely, again, to identify what you are not. And so here I get to have the APA into these next, you know, these years, 20 years on or so, that now the APA is really discovering what it is, and APA is really coming into shape. And I think with the help of the staff that I have now with Buzz and with Britton, we're able to really kind of give form to what the APA will go and do in the future. The exciting part now about the APA is we've never had a technical director. So, and we've never had a technical director like Buzz. I should mention that. So I believe you had Buzz on your podcast as well. So I won't repeat too much of his information, but I would encourage folks to go and listen to that conversation because it was excellent. But we've never had the ability to deploy someone like Buzz that has, I believe, the perfect combination. He's a bit of a unicorn in our industry because he has DOT background. He has practical construction experience through the building of the test track for 20 years, you know, all of the cycles that they've gone through. And then he understands the need of decision makers because they're folks that want what is the best answer. And that's really what they were trying to get at the test track. And so Buzz knows how to blend all those things together and balance all of those priorities. And now we get to take him and deploy him across the country. So it's not just one SAPA that's benefiting, or it's not just AI, or it's not just NAPA, but it's all of us across the partnership that get to use Buzz and to use him effectively. And then I'll mention with Britton, she's a rising star within our industry. And I always joke and I tell folks that my job is to have Britton take my job in about 10 years or so. And I would consider that a tremendous success for the APA because Britton is just that good. And there's a few wonderful things that she's doing now. I think growing some of those historically successful programs in the APA, such as the Perpetual Payment Awards, we've given Britton full ownership of those programs so that we can see what she'll do with them next. And she's writing her own story with, you know, programs like that. With the Perpetual Payment Awards, for example, she's already reimagined the toolkit for the award process, the timeframe for the awards, how we're going to source the awards, all with an eye towards getting those awards more readily into the hands of our agencies and our folks that are winning those awards in a more timely fashion. So it's a pretty good time to be at the APA. I'm just along for the ride with two great folks that I get to work with. I think my job is to really make sure that we don't take it off the rails too far, although some may argue we already have. My job is to really keep it on the rails, but build the next set of tracks into the right direction, which is, you know, something I hope maybe we could talk about here in just a moment. But that's primarily my job.
Well, I think that's a good segue. So what are your top priorities and how do you see them shaping the future of the APA?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the hard part, as I mentioned, in these years that the APA has been in existence, it's been really hard to kind of take, you know, your two fingers and bring them together and pinpoint exactly what the APA is and what the APA does. I think part of that, and this again goes to my background with UAPA, but we needed to simplify the mission of the APA. So if you go now to the APA's website, there's a couple paragraphs about, hey, this is what the APA is and does. And if you were to read those or if I were to read those, and then we were to take a quiz on what the APA is, we would have a hard time answering it, just to be honest. And so if I can take that information and I can squeeze it down to, this is what the APA does. It champions, supports, it promotes quality asphalt pavement, period. We can get somewhere, and we can get somewhere really, really quickly. And then it's not a question anymore about, hey, what does the APA actually go and do? Well, the APA goes out and champions, support, and promotes quality asphalt pavements across the entire country, across our entire industry. Well, how do we build that? I think we build it on three key pillars, which are innovation, education, and collaboration. And if we can point to those three key pillars, and I can say, what Dale's asking me to do today, does that fit within these three pillars? Does it fit within that mission statement? If I can answer that, then I think I can go do that. And if I can't answer that, then we need to understand that that's something that the APA shouldn't necessarily delve into. So I think for me, that's my top priority, is to get buy-in from all parties, from all folks that we engage in, that this is now our mission statement, and these are the three pillars upon which we are built. And if it fits within those puzzle pieces, the thing that you're asking us to do, then we'll go and do it, and we'll do it very well. But if it doesn't, then you need to know that, hey, maybe you have identified a need outside of the APA that we need to discuss as an industry, or is that something that you can do on your own and do it more effectively? I think the goal for us from the APA, and you and I have had a couple conversations around from this, I will never come into the Missouri Asphalt Pavement Association and say, hey, man, you know, Missouri DOT, Dale's telling you this, but we're going to tell you this. The idea is that we should never come in and supplant the good work that you're doing. We should supplement what you and Rick do and the other good folks with your association do, because you're the ones with the boots on the ground. You are the ones that have the relationships. And our job is to really come in and to collaborate and to, you know, verify what it is that you're doing is correct, or what it is that you're proposing is the correct way to go. And here's the data, here's the research, here's the marketing, all of those things that the APA is responsible for to help back that up, to supply both to you and to the decision makers so that they feel comfortable doing what's right for industry as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with there being, is there 38 of us state associations? Can't remember if we picked up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, 40.
We're up to 40. That's what I was thinking. And, you know, each of us have kind of a unique perspective from each state. You know, some states are engineers, some have lobbyists. We've got a handful, you know, I think with attorneys, and just how we approach our job is all a little bit different just based on the local climate. And, you know, I really like your rethinking of the mission statement, because I think you can try to be everything to everybody, but really it comes down to what's it all about. And I think your mission statement really reflects that. And you talked about resources. So could you highlight some of the key resources the APA offers and how these resources can help someone like us here in Missouri or our neighbors in Illinois or Kansas?
Yeah, you bet. And part of these are going to change. So I kind of want to set up, hey, this is what's going on now. And then we can talk maybe even a little bit about what might be available in the future. But for today, I think one of the biggest things is the partnership calls. That's a new name for a call that's been around for a long time. It used to be called a deployment call. And now we call them a partnership call, where we are bringing in representatives from AI, representatives from NAPA, and the 40 state asphalt pavement associations once a month to engage each other around, this is what's happening in our industry, and maybe here's a bit of, you know, breaking news or educational topic that we can learn from, each of us learn from, and really have that type of fruitful exchange. And there's no reason why we shouldn't keep doing that from the APA's perspective in today's world, right? It's very easy to jump on a Zoom call. It's very easy to learn from each other. And I believe those calls, that even just that minor tweak, changing it from a deployment, calling it a deployment call to a partnership call, has been meaningful and substantive so far in the 6 months that I've been around. I think the other thing I mentioned, I won't delve too much more into it, but the Perpetual Pavement Awards Program. We have three new winners this year, I think 29 total winners, three new states that won this year, and 29 total winners this year. But if you look at a map of the states that haven't won perpetual payment awards, there's still a lot of states out there that haven't won an award. And I think that's something that we should go after very vigorously from the APA standpoint. Again, I mentioned Britain is our owner there. I think one unique thing that we're engaging with you on is what I'm calling partnership engagement opportunities. So you've identified a need in your state, right, to think a little bit differently around LCCA, think a little bit differently around how we're designing pavements. Can we set up through the Missouri Association, with the support of the APA and other partners, an opportunity for a great information exchange, right? And so we're looking at an opportunity there to say, hey, Agency A, we'd really love you to talk to Agency B about what's successful and what you're doing here, and can you learn from each other? And I think the APA can do a little bit more of that and help provide, you know, those type of beneficial exchanges for partners. I think the other thing that's been loud and clear, we've engaged on individual calls with the majority of the SAPAs. We haven't gotten to all of them yet, but the new APA team has reached out, I believe, to date about to 24 of the SAPAs, 24 of the 40. And one thing that's been readily apparent and a need that has been identified is to continue down the path of, you know, ready-made social media content, ready-made marketing content, things that folks that can take and make their own, right, with their logos, and be able to really get helpful information into the hands of folks. And so the APA will need to revisit a lot of those programs, and then produce new programs moving forward that will be beneficial to folks. We have one resource currently that I think is very, very underutilized that I would love to see more folks take advantage of. But as an APA team, we're offering targeted lunch and learns, which are different than webinars. We hold webinars, and we've programmed those out now for a year in advance. So hopefully you and others, as you create your own educational opportunities, can look to those and either say, hey, let's point people towards this, or they're talking about this, we should do part two about this, or they're going to talk about this, I don't need to talk about that, I'm going to talk about this. And that's our goal with programming those so far out, so that you all have a heads up as to what we're doing. But the idea being that we have webinars, and the last one we had 800 people register for, which is exciting. But we have this other component called a lunch and learn, which we call them in my days at UAPA, like brunch and learns, to where you could get on for 30 minutes during the lunch hour and really get to a topic, or really have a really meaty discussion about one thing in particular. And these lunch and learns are designed to get all the way down to a group of two, three, five, 10 people, whether they're at a city, a county, or a design firm, to bring to them the national expertise of someone like a Buzz or the perspective of someone like me, bring to them, face to face in a small group setting, a really great opportunity, I think, to learn something. So we hope to take more advantage of those moving forward. And I know I've spoken a lot. I'll give one last example, but the PEC program, the Pavement Economics Committee, research and deployment of cutting edge stuff that's happening in our industry. APA has historically been charged with going out and marketing those products once they've been completed. And I think the challenge historically has been that the APA was always at the tail end of that discussion and being asked to take things that they didn't necessarily have the background on and go and talk about them. And so my proposal and what we're working on internally is to how do we engage the APA so that we know the end from the beginning, so that we are in the discussions as those contract papers are being signed with whatever research institution or whatever party may be doing the work, where that money is being, strategically and effectively deployed. If we're really going to make it count, then we need to know how we're going to talk about it when it's all said and done. And I think getting the APA engaged at the start of those conversations is going to be critical to the success of deployment moving forward. I think Richard Willis, director of vice president of engineering at NAPA, said it best at the NCAT test track conference this year. He said, research is meaningless unless it's effectively deployed in essence. And I think he hit the nail on the head there, and that's stuck with me now as I've come into the APA role.
I think that's really great, Reed. I think, the PEC has been around for a while, and I think sometimes we all see a shiny red new toy and we think, oh, we want that. But then, what does it look like when we get it? And I've always said, sometimes I think we need to start with the end in mind and think about, if we do the research, how can we deploy it? And I appreciate your all's approach to that. I think it's only going to make us better as we move forward.
Yeah, we're 100% aligned there, Dale, is seeing that end from the beginning and saying and asking the right questions about it, right? Like, hey, it may do this, but can we really talk about it, or can we really, develop something that's effective marketing wise around it? Those are the questions I think have been asked at times historically, and I think we just need to make sure we get back to that and we stick right there to that point as well from the APA's perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think is the most important part of your job as the APA director?
I think the most important part of my job is providing that vision and strategic direction, right? And then I think holding accountable APA staff and myself to execute on that and report back to the partners about how we did that. And I think we're developing some tools that will be ready-made and readily accessible for the partners to see that. And for us to see it as a staff, so that we know from an objective standpoint that we're either being successful or we are not. And so that's my, I think, most important job is to develop those principles and tools that will allow the APA, as I mentioned, should I move on someplace or something happens, the next person can come in and say, oh, these are the things that I'm responsible for. Here's how the reporting structure works. And here's how we mark success. And APA, to its credit, has had work plans. It's had these meetings, right, that take place, and there's a report out. But I feel like there's an opportunity for us to just tighten that a bit to I think, put a couple more tools in place that will give us that direction. And those are all things that I've kind of discovered as growing an association like UAPA, we had to constantly remind people as to what we're doing and why we're doing it and to have their appropriate level of buy-in. And I think that's my most important job from the executive director role with the APA is to provide that vision, strategic direction, but not just to provide it, but then to execute on it.
So what do you think is the most challenging part of your job?
Yeah, that's a great question. 6 months in, I would say it's the alignment and growth of our partners. And I'm not obviously responsible for every aspect of that, but it definitely is a great opportunity. I always view challenges as opportunities, right? So I'm going to frame it into that mind. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to continue additional alignment between the three partners that make up the body of the APA. What I mean by that is all three are great entities. All three are wonderful supporters of the APA and have been for many, many years. Obviously, for my own self-interest, I don't want that to change. I want a job. But I think we can provide through the APA what I'll call, that bridge, if you will. Or I always use the analogy of, it sounds a bit crass, but can the APA be that welcome mat that welcomes these partners home to our industry and says, hey, you're in a good, safe space. You're in a comfortable spot to tell us what you really feel and what can we agree on, what can we not agree on, and how do we grow together? And I think that's for the existential part of our industry, you know, that is vitally important, is that we are talking to each other internally, that we feel comfortable doing that. And I really do believe that the APA, that other component of the APA, that's not that external component that faces our decision makers, but really that allows our partners to engage each other. I think it can serve that role. It has served that role. And I think it can even grow into that role a little bit more to have those type of conversations with each other. So we're looking at ways that we can provide more forms for that. And we're looking at ways even to, you know, to grow the partnership. Does the APA need to bring on additional partners? I think is a valid question that a lot of folks are going to ask in a few weeks here at the APA Leadership Summit that's taking place at the end of August. So that's a challenge. It's a great opportunity is the way I would frame it. And then if I were to be honest with you, my family says the toughest part of my job is the travel. So yeah. I've been gone quite a bit these first few months. In June, there was two nights and a span of 3 weeks that I slept in my own bed, and they were not consecutive nights. So it was a night in and then gone and you know, more travel and then come back for one night and then gone again. Over 3 weeks. So my family is, we're adjusting to that a little bit, but honestly speaking, and going back to one of your earliest questions, I love this job. I really do. I miss you, APA. I think that's a natural feeling for anyone, right, with a job change. But the second component, I get asked this a lot, and the second component I always tell people is I have zero regrets. I have no regrets about making this change because I love what I'm doing now, and I love the APA.
Yeah. So if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, knowing what you know now, what would it be?
Be grateful. I think, so I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. I think I've had a lot of conversations with God through prayer and said, hey, you know what, God, this is what I really want for my life, and you better give it to me. And I don't think he operates too much like that. But what I have observed is that what I thought I needed out of my life, I've been given in many other meaningful and beautiful ways. I'm sorry to be a little emotional, but I've been given all of that and then more. And the beautiful thing about age, it's not just the gray hair, but it's perspective. And as I look back on that and I look back on what I thought my life needed to be, I see that it's become much, much more. Because of God, as frankly speaking. And I just never want to forget that. And I wish I would have told my 18-year-old self that, is that it'll all be okay. And at every step of the way, you ought to be grateful, because it's going to lead to beautiful, awesome things, like three sons and a daughter and a beautiful wife of, you know, 23 years. So could I have ever asked for more? I probably did selfishly, but could I ever have been given more? And the answer is no, because it's all just been awesome.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that, you know, everything has a way of working out, and we don't always maybe see that at the time, but I think there's a something that's guiding us to where we need to be. And one thing I've always appreciated is your passion for everything, Reed. You're probably one of the most passionate people I know, and your passion for the industry is just outstanding.
Well, if passion is another word for crier, I'll take it, because I cry a lot. But I think it is, because I wear, you know, like, honestly speaking, like, I wear my emotions on my sleeve, and I'm not afraid of that. Like, I think I tried to hide that a bit for a while in my life. And I love that part of me. I love that part of me. I honestly do. And I'm glad that it bleeds through, because I really, like I said, I love this industry, and I am passionate about this industry, because it just, think about our industry, like, it's full of all these people that just get up day after day and either go to work all day in the hot blazing sun, or go to work all night in the dark of the night, and they build our world, and they connect our families, and they make commerce happen. And then they go to bed, and they get up, and they do it again, and they do it for untold amount of hours every construction season, and nobody knows about it. Because yeah, they're just that good, because we don't get up and we don't say, look at us, look at me, look at all the things that we do. You and I go to bed and we wake up tomorrow and we have a new asphalt road and we have no idea how it happened, but it just happened. And it's great, because now I can get to the grocery store faster, or I get to, or that pothole has been fixed, or whatever it may be. And there's all just these countless individuals that just make it work. And they're awesome. Like, and you know this, because they're your members as well. And I got to know a lot of them here in Utah. And that's that, if you were to ask me, the best part of that, this new job as well, is getting to see this now across the country. It's just all these great people that go and make this thing work. And they do so without asking for anything. And it's just amazing to me to be a witness of it. So yeah, if I'm going to be passionate about it, or if I'm going to be emotional about it, that's a dang good thing to be emotional and passionate about, because these people need to be heard, and these people need to be seen and recognized for the awesome work that they do. And it's pleasure. It's been the joy of my life the last 12 years to be a witness to it. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think most of the contractors, you know, whether they're from Missouri or Utah or the states in between, I think they're all kind of cut from the same cloth. I mean, you won't find a greater group to, you know, work with, or just, you know, be out at dinner with, or, you know, at meeting with meetings. You know, they all have the same passion, and you're right. They go to bed every night and get up and repeat it every day, and never say, look at me. And just, you know, and one, as I was sitting here thinking about, you know, talk about your passion, I remember when Dave Yates and I, you know, when they first hired me here, and we actually had, you know, a few months to interact and work together, he said, Dale, you're gonna be bleeding black before this is done. And I, you know, I guess I'd say, Reed, you probably bleed blacker than anybody I know, but I think we all have a passion for the industry. So
we do. And it's such a blessing to be a part of it.
So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, especially as it relates to the future of the asphalt industry and your vision, the APA?
Yeah, there is. And thanks for this question. This one, I think, has caused me a little bit of thought and pondering. And I've had this unique opportunity. I mentioned a lot of the travel, right? So I was at a meeting for the California Association for CalAPA, and the transportation chair, Carl Gardino, gets up and he gives his talk right before I do. And it's actually a very thoughtful talk. He's been the chair in California through various administrations, Republican, Democratic. And so it speaks to the character of the man. It speaks to his role, right, and his engagement. So I never had met him before, but kind of instantly, you know, almost had a man crush on this guy, because he was just that well spoken. He was just that, you could just tell he thinks things through. And he gave three pieces of advice that I think pertain very well to the APA. He said, we can choose to be engaged, or we can choose to be enraged. That was his first piece of advice. And then he said, likewise, we can fight over the crumbs, or we can learn how to grow the pie. And then his final piece of advice was, we can show up and speak up, or we can choose to be shut down. And I think those three things, and when I think about the future of the APA, and I think about the future of our industry, that's incredible bits of advice, right? We always have a choice. Each one of us as an individual, collectively as an industry, we have a choice about our future. I think a lot of times we feel like we don't. I feel like a lot of times we as an industry will say, oh, we're being acted upon, and we're not necessarily acting. I think as an industry, we can do a little bit more acting. Like, we can act and not be acted upon. We can go tell our stories. We don't have to get angry, but we can engage. We don't have to say, this is not, you know, that this is my piece of the pie and you don't get any part of it and you're not part of the club. Rather, we can say, how do we grow this club to include you? How do we make sure that we understand where your voice is being heard? And then finally, like, if we don't do this, like, there are voices in opposition that would certainly want to see changes to our industry, you know, even to the point of shutting plants down, shutting down operations when it comes to mining or otherwise. And I feel like we have a much better story to tell that's just not being heard. And so the opportunity for us to show up and to speak up is definitely there. And I think those bells are ringing more loudly than they have in a long time. And I think that's the challenge for each of us in all of our roles, is to go out and say, how do I speak, and how do I speak effectively, and how do I do so without making you my enemy? Because honestly, you're my colleague, and I need to understand and learn from you and engage with you. And so there you have it. That's the role of the APA. That's what we hope to go do. That's why I love working with folks like you and the other SHAPAs, is because I think those opportunities abound in our industry, and they're ours for the taking. I think we just need to be willing to go do that.
Well, Reed, I certainly appreciate working with you, and appreciate you taking the time to join us today. I'll give, you know, the listeners a little preview. I think on October 3rd, we're going to try to put together our, what I'm kind of innovative, pavement workshop. And maybe once we get that all fleshed out, maybe you and I, and maybe some of the other partners can sit down, maybe we'll have a little podcast to give people that might attend, preview what we see there. So,
yeah, that's great. We actually have a planning meeting for this a little bit later today with a few of the partners that are helping us. So Buzz and I will be on a call with a couple of folks later today to try to figure this out a little bit more. So we're really excited about the opportunity. Again, right up the alley of the APA, right up the alley of being able to partner and supplement the awesome work that you're doing within the state. I mean, all credit where credit's due. This is your idea. So our job is to go in and to make you look good. And I hope that we can do that for you.
Well, you're going to have to put some lipstick on a pig, but
I'll bring my makeup bag.
I appreciate it. Well, Reed, thanks for taking the time today. And I'd like to thank you for listening to Asphalt Talk, the podcast by and for asphalt professionals. If you enjoyed listening and learned something, please leave us a review. Your review will help us connect with other professionals like yourself so we can keep the conversation going.
1992 called, they want their website back. Stop apologizing for your crappy site and stop working with that company who thinks hot mix is the latest snack craze. Work with folks who have been speaking your language for the past 17 years. And get a website that's not a gigantic pain in the you-know-what to build. Visit maycreate.com, that's M-A-Y-E-create.com, for a free consultation and quote. Because if you think your website sucks, so does everyone else.